Welcome back to Open Line, WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, Ohioans are already casting their ballots for what we call the November election. They're mailing in absentee ballots, or they're voting in person in Franklin County. That's at Betts Memorial. So the election's underway. We have election officials and experts in our studio to help answer your questions about voting and voting procedures. Back with us, Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner. Good to have you here. Michael Stanziano, Jr. is director of the Franklin County Board of Elections. Welcome. And Peg Rosenfield, election specialist with the Ohio League of Women Voters. Good to have you all here today.
Thank you.
And we're at 614-292-8513 for your questions or comments about voting and the voting process. And you can email the comment or question to openline at wosu.org. Well, early voting is going on now. Estimates as high as 40%, I have heard, will vote early by mail or in person. Secretary Bruner, what are your estimates? What do you know?
Well, we think conservatively it'll be about 25% statewide. Mm-hmm. It's likely to be a little higher in the areas of the state where we have more concentrated voters, such as the urban areas. But I think overall we'll be looking at 25%, perhaps a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And higher, though, in something like Columbus. I've heard political figures here say, we think 30, 40 more percent. So that's possible, is it?
Absolutely. I think we've seen a tremendous response already in terms of people wanting to take advantage of voting at their own convenience and their own time. And we were already up to about 160,000 mailed applications, and we've seen just under 7,000 in person already.
7,000 in person down at Betts Memorial.
Yes.
In Franklin County. Well, that's pretty good. There was this whole controversy over whether you could register and vote on the same day, which I guess you can do through today. Is that right? Register to vote and vote in person at Betts Memorial or wherever?
Yeah. That's correct. Around the state, there are five counties where they are using satellite locations, but otherwise it's at the Board of Elections in whatever county you live in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a place on our website, Secretary of State's website, where you can find out where you vote early and what the hours are.
And you can still request, we're calling them absentee ballots, but I mean they apply to everybody now, right? Anybody can cast their vote by mail. Is that right?
Correct. The General Assembly in 2006 with House Bill 3 changed the law so anybody can apply and get an absentee ballot.
So if somebody, let's say, got the original form in the mail to fill out and they tossed it out and decided they weren't going to vote absentee or by mail, can they still call up and get another one and get it to them in time and get their application back and the ballot in time to vote?
Absolutely. You can request one up to the Saturday before, and they're available, or you can come down in person and vet and also get it if that's more of an interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Peg Rosenfield?
Well, the league's encouraging people to vote absentee. I have my absentee ballot with me right here. I haven't sent it back yet. But it will relieve the concerns people had about the long lines. If you, there may be a short line at absentee voting, but mm-hmm. if you go in sometime that's convenient for you within the next month, then you know you won't have to wait in line and miss work or not mm-hmm. pick up the kids.
You can do it right up to the 3rd of November, is that right?
Yes, mm-hmm. you can vote in person up to the day before the election, mm-hmm. in person at the board. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do it by mail, you need to start at least a week ahead,
sure.
or you just won't have time for that back and forth.
When does the board have to actually receive a mailed-in voter ballot? By when, in order for it to count?
I can answer that one.
Yeah.
There's a new law that went into effect this year. So as long as the ballot is mailed by November 3rd, which is the day before the election, mm-hmm. any absentee ballot received through the 10th day after the election and everything's filled out correctly on the envelope, it will be counted.
If it's postmarked by the 3rd.
Correct. The reason it's not, it can't be except postmarked on election day is there's the potential that someone could see the results and then decide, okay, I'm going to go ahead and submit
sure.
this ballot now.
Sure. Do you think, Peg, you suggested people vote absentee, but you know, there's something about the experience of going out on election day, you know, and with all your neighbors and
Absolutely.
Waiting 5 hours and casting your ballot. Right?
I totally agree. It's the chief ritual of democracy. And I love to vote in person. I can't because I work at a phone bank that the league runs Channel 10 all day on election day. But if you're willing to take, I agree, going to the polls is the one that really feels like voting. But if you can't do it, don't miss voting, so mm-hmm. do it by absentee.
Mm-hmm. Mike Stanziano, you told the Columbus Dispatch that you couldn't really guarantee there might not be some waits up to an hour, right?
Correct.
Franklin County.
In terms of we have so many machines, so many locations, and expecting a historic turnout, we can't guarantee, or we anticipate there will be lines on election day. The only guarantee in terms of lines that we can make is if you do vote by mail, you'll have no line.
Mm-hmm. So it could be an hour-long wait. I mean, we should prepare for that.
I think different locations will see different results, but we did commission a study in terms of waiting line and knowing that in certain precincts they have a significantly longer ballot in terms of the issues and questions that come up, not just the candidates, mm-hmm. and that is going to cause for waits at those precincts.
How about things like machine allocation? I mean, are you pretty sure that you've got that? Because we remember, I mean, there's just some horrific things in Franklin County previously. Do you think you have enough machines? Do you think they're allocated properly?
I don't know if there's ever enough machines. We also have backup paper ballots in use or in play this election. We have twice as many as we had in 2004, so that's a significant increase. We're also allocating it based on several different factors, and the Secretary of State provided a directive that we should consider. And we're also going to have the paper for as an option for people that want to get through, don't want to vote on a machine.
Secretary Bruni, is each county then will have paper ballots available. Will the poll workers make people aware of that when they walk in the door or no?
Our directive requires that there be four signs prominently posted so that voters can see that they have that option. In addition, 53 of our counties are the touchscreen voting machine systems. And so we have directed that those counties, with a few small exceptions, plan and provide for the ability for voters to get into two lines, one for the machine and one for paper. The exception to that is if it's a single precinct polling location with 700 or fewer voters, and then we think that one line is sufficient there. Mm-hmm. We kind of analogized it to you could have two lines going into one cash register at McDonald's, but it's not going to happen any faster if you only have one cash register. So we've worked with boards of elections to have two lines either through merging poll books for multiple precinct polling locations or to actually have two poll books with a central list that the list is checked then before the voters sign the poll book.
In the May primary, there were, in fact, paper ballots available. Were there in all 88 counties?
In the March primary, there were paper ballots available. 35 of our counties, that's their whole system, is paper ballots. The others, we made it available, and the boards of elections who I worked with had asked me not to require the poll workers to ask the question, paper or plastic, as some people like to put it. Mm-hmm. And then we gave them posters but did not mandate that they use them. So there were a number of counties that really were against having this and did everything they could to keep voters from learning about them. But that's changed when a number of counties saw that they actually were a safety net when there were power outages and mm-hmm. misprogrammed machines. And they did save the day to keep people voting instead of turning them away.
Do we know an overall percentage statewide how many people chose to vote paper?
It depends on the county. I don't think we've got an overall percentage, mm-hmm. but Mahoning County, for example, was one county that embraced the idea initially. They had the highest incidence of use, and I think what we'll see is I'm actually hearing boards of elections who opposed them before using them as an example for why they can alleviate long lines.
Mike mm-hmm. Cinziano in Franklin County, what was the percentage? Do we know how many people used in the March primary, how many people used a paper ballot?
It wasn't very significant in Franklin
small,
County.
Small number.
It
right?
was small, less than 5% of the total.
Mm-hmm. Peg Rosenfield?
Yeah, we really urge people to do two things to make sure they get around this long line problem. One is take with you a list or a sample ballot. Mm-hmm. Look up your ballot before you go and know how you're going to vote, which will make possible for you to vote more quickly so the people behind you don't have to wait. Also make sure that way you don't miss any of the offices or issues because you got them on your list. You'll sure find them. And remember, you can ask for a paper ballot. If the lines bother you, just go up and ask for a paper ballot, and you can fill it out and get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Secretary Bruni, you'd originally wanted everybody to go paper ballot, right? All the counties, 100%. Huh? Because you said the voting machines were pretty hackable. Somebody with a cell phone could just come along and alter the vote count on the machine.
We did find some significant security problems, but the legislature was either unwilling or unable to provide funding to make the change for all the state's 88 counties. So what we did was to work with the boards of elections with a bipartisan team and develop best security practices. So we have in place, each county has its own security plan in place, which they provided to our office. But we also have security procedures that start with security at the board of elections, the transport of equipment and supplies, as well as at the polling place mm-hmm. and with the server.
How can, given that you suggested that they were hackable, I mean, by somebody with a cell phone at a certain distance, how can we have any idea at all or any confidence that in our voting system?
We will also be conducting post-election audits in every county. We piloted that in the March primary election. Mm-hmm. And what we did was to take up to a random sample of 10% of the precincts in the county, comparing a hand count of the ballots with the electronic count, and then making changes where necessary. But we believe that that will ensure the confidence that we need with the systems that are in place now. The systems in place now can accurately conduct an election as long as the correct procedures are followed, the security protocols are followed. They're not optimum. It's kind of like a car that you know will get you to and from work, but at some point you know it's going to go out on you.
Have some states gone to all paper ballots?
A number of states have.
Which ones, for example?
Florida, Iowa, New Mexico, mm-hmm. I believe Maryland is, New York is, and Tennessee has as well.
Because I suppose the nightmare for this election would be, first of all, very long lines in some counties, and second, people holding up their hand the next day and saying, look, we think these machines have been hacked. We think this is not a fair election. And once again, Ohio would be, oh, my goodness.
We have been working in partnership with the boards of elections to prepare and prepare and plan and prepare. And I have been touring the state, visiting various boards of elections, and from my observations, the boards are doing well and they are prepared and will be ready for what we think will be an 80% turnout.
Mm-hmm. Peg Rosenfield, your thoughts as to, for the League of Women Voters as to the security of our electronic voting machines?
Well, the League has been in favor of going to optical scan paper ballots for, I believe, it was 3 or 4 years ago we came out with that mm-hmm. recommendation.
That's where you fill in with the pencil, the little square or circle, and you put it into the machine, right, and it scans it optically and it drops it in the machine, so you've got the paper ballot as evidence. Yeah.
It's what we do when we vote on absentee ballots. Those mm-hmm. are optical scan paper mm-hmm. ballots. And the reason being that there is no perfect system, but at least with the paper ballot, you have something physical you can look at if there's a question about what the voter intended. You have a piece of paper with the vote on it, and people can, human beings can look at it and see. And you have to be careful about keeping those votes secure, but it doesn't drop votes, it doesn't flip votes, all those things.
Mm-hmm. Peg Rosenfield is election specialist with the Ohio League of Women Voters. Michael Stinziano, Jr., director of the Franklin County Board of Elections. Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner is with us. 614-292-8513. Call us right to you with your questions. Claire's on the line. Hi, Claire. Claire, are you with us? Okay, we are not hearing Claire. Let me try that one time. Claire, are you here? Let us try Vicki. Vicki, you're on the line. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. My daughter is a college student studying in Germany this year, and we already made the request for her absentee ballot and everything, but I was wondering if you have a recommendation on when she should mail that back in, because I'm kind of doubtful that if she mails it November 3rd, it'll get there by the 13th.
Well,
yesterday.
Has she received her ballot yet?
I don't know. She hasn't mentioned it. I haven't thought to ask her about it yet.
As soon as she gets it, she should turn it around and get it back in. There is a very valuable resource that she can go to. She can access it through my website, but it's the Overseas Vote Foundation. They actually offer a means to get a discount on FedExing that ballot back if she has concerns. And if worse comes to worse, there also is the federal write-in absentee ballot, which would enable her to at least vote in the federal elections. But a lot of those questions, it's a very accessible, easy-to-navigate site. And she can go to sos.state.oh.us. It'll take her directly to a specialized Ohio site through the Overseas Vote Foundation.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vicki. Our next caller is Paul. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yes, I have two questions, if I may. Mm-hmm. I have not received my absentee ballot, and my wife got hers the first of the month. Whom do I contact to see if I get one?
Are you in Franklin County?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mike.
If you go to the Franklin County Board of Elections website, you can look up to see if one's been mailed. We did not mail them until the 28th was the first day we could actually mail absentee ballots. Or you can contact our office at 462-3100. And you can also verify it on our online or on our phone lookup or contact an individual within our office.
Thank you, Lee. And I want to thank the League of Women Voters for their great paper. Do you know when that will be available in the library?
Yes, it won't be out until the Sunday before Election Day.
Will that be in the Dispatch or at the library?
It'll be in the Dispatch. However, you can access it on the local League of Women Voters website. They already have it up electronically, and that is LWVCOLS. In other words, League of Women Voters Columbus, .org. And then you just look under Election Guide and click on Download, and it'll show you the whole ballot.
You do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for your question. We have an email question here. A couple of questions here. Is there any way someone who mails in an absentee ballot can check to be sure their ballot was actually received?
Again, if you go to our website, you can look up your individual status, and we'll be posting when we receive them that the ballot was received. For example, currently you could see we've received your application and we've mailed your absentee ballot. And then we'll also be updating it that it was received.
For every individual voter in Franklin County.
Yes. Great. And that's at vote.franklincountyohio.gov.
Another question. If a request for an absentee ballot has been submitted, a request, can the voter later change their mind and vote early at Veterans Memorial, I guess, if the request has been submitted?
Yes. We have the ability with the setup down at Vets Memorial that we know if someone has requested it or if we've even mailed one out. We cancel that one out. We consider it a spoiled ballot and give them a second one. And then we just ask that they destroy that first ballot if they receive it.
Another email question. How and when are early voting ballots going to be processed? Will they all just sit somewhere until Election Day and then be counted, or will they be scanned beforehand and counted on Election Day?
Currently, the ballots that we've received in person and that are coming in by mail are under double lock and key under camera in our ballot vault at the Board of Elections. Because the Secretary of State's directive, we have 10 days where we can begin processing them. Mm-hmm. That's significant change in terms of past practice where it was just the Saturday before. So those will be some of the first ballots that are processed. Nothing gets counted until Election Day, though.
Okay. We're at 614-292-8513. Peg Rosenfield.
I want to just put in, I've heard many people over the years saying they don't count the absentee ballots unless the election's very close. And I think what Michael just explained shows why this isn't true. They count the absentee ballots first.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And when you hear early results on election night around 8:30, those are the absentee ballots. So there is no truth to this that they sometimes don't count absentees.
You know, I heard one commentator say, and I couldn't understand it, that he thought that it was more likelihood that an absentee ballot could be tampered with than if you went on election day and voted on the machine. I'm not sure I follow the logic there, but any thoughts about that?
I know what they're concerned about. They're concerned that somebody's going to open up the envelope and open up the secrecy envelope and pull it out and see how you voted. My own children have raised that question with me. But you have to have at least a modicum of faith that they do what they say they do, which is they check the ballot envelope to see that you're the valid voter.
Mm-hmm.
Then they separate the ballot from the envelope, and now the ballot is completely unidentified. And then it isn't until they get those all out there that then they count all the ballots. So you have to have at least a little bit of faith that people aren't lying to you.
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah.
I think some of the concern goes back to the days of punch card voting, because those chads could come loose. Those chads could, if there's only one selection in a race, if another selection is punched through, that's an overvote, and then that vote's invalidated because the election officials can't determine what the voter's intent was. That system's been eliminated with the Help America Vote Act. So I think the paper ballot systems that we use now are all optical scan, much more difficult to tamper with.
Mm-hmm. Let's try here. Claire, let's try you one more time. Are you with us? Claire, you're on the air. And she is gone. So that was our second choice there, 614-292-8513. How many counties are using the optical scan machines that the League of Women Voters actually prefers?
Well, in reality, all 88 are, because absentee ballots are optical scan ballots. But in terms of their entire system being optical scan, that would be 35 of our 88 counties.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, Peg, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, there was a question that we've gotten, and I know that you've gotten it too, that I just want to bring up, that there's been a rumor floating around on the Internet that people will be turned away from the polls if they have on T-shirts or buttons that have campaign pictures or slogans on them. And it isn't true. Now, it is true that you're not supposed to wear those, and the poll workers will will ask you either to take off the button and either take off, turn the T-shirt inside out or put something on over it, because that's electioneering to be in a polling place. But you will not be turned away from the polls on that. And I think it's a particular problem this year because both campaigns are so energized that there are a lot of people who really want to show who they're for, and they just shouldn't wear that to the polling place.
What is the rule? How many feet do you have to be from a polling place in terms of electioneering?
100.
100 feet, okay.
There are usually flags that mark that.
Flags that mark that. Mm-hmm. Well, how about election observers now? There are these nonpartisan election groups that want to observe the balloting and the counting of the ballots even. I mean, what can they observe and what can't they observe?
There's a directive, a very comprehensive directive our office issued on election observers in February of 2008. Election observers can be appointed by a political party, by a group of five or more candidates, in certain instances by a ballot issue committee. The election observers have to actually be appointed by the 11th day before the election. And they don't have the right to challenge a voter. They simply can watch the process. Mm-hmm. They can be there for the processing and the counting of the absentee ballots. They can be there at the Board of Elections. They can also be at the polling locations.
So they can't challenge a voter and say, hey, look, we don't think this voter over here is presenting proper ID. They can't say anything about that at all.
No, that's really a separate process, and any challenges to a voter really is a challenge to their right to vote, their voter registration. Mm-hmm. And those have to be filed at least 20 days before the election. We anticipate with a lot of the discord that we're experiencing this year that the boards may unfortunately see some large numbers of challenges.
Mm-hmm. So now tell me, what can an observer do? Let's say the voting is over for the day at 7:30 or whatever in the evening. Can they stick around and watch? And what does a worker do to count that with these electronic machines? I think that do they simply pull out the little piece that records the votes? And who can watch what?
I think the observer can watch the reconciliation. There's a bunch of forms that the poll workers fill out at the end of the day, kind of closing up shop, that account for everything that's gone on that day, both with the paper ballots and with the machines. And the observers can sit there and observe and watch as the process is closed down and the procedures. It's all outlined also in our poll worker manual.
Mm-hmm. And can they – I mean, some election groups have suggested that they would like to – when you take those results – pardon me, I think they take them in a car. You just simply take them in a car to election headquarters. Is that what you do?
In Franklin County, they do take it to the Board of Elections warehouse in a bipartisan team this year that will have one Democrat, one Republican poll worker, and then they just take them back. Now, the observer – we have yet to have an observer asked to ride along with that, but – we do anticipate that we will have observers also out at the warehouse.
But no one's asked to ride along with you. Would you deny that request if they did?
I don't know if it's been provided for under the General Assembly's legislation on it.
I think that it would create a difficulty because if that observer were one party or another, it would knock the even number of party people out of balance.
But they can follow. That's what they do. They get in another car and follow them to make sure they go straight to where they're supposed to.
You've seen that happen. They actually do this.
I've heard of it happening, yes.
Okay. We are talking about voting, which is already underway here in Franklin County and across the state with our panel of voting officials and experts. We're going to take a little pause here, and then we'll be back with you callers and our panel at WOSU 820 NPR News.
What does the son of an Orthodox rabbi do when he starts to question his own faith? Benjamin Cohen went to church. I'm Lynn Neary, from megachurches to Christian wrestling matches, how a year with Jesus helped make one writer a better Jew. My Jesus Year. Benjamin Cohen joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 on WOSU 820, NPR News. Hungry for more than headlines and short sound bites about our community? Watch Columbus on the Record for in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues and stories affecting Columbus and Central Ohio. Fridays at 9:30 p.m. on WOSU-TV.
The bailout bill has been passed and signed, but you know what? We're going to be feeling this one for a long, long time. Wall Street is still making up its mind. Henry Paulson's got his hands full, and Congress isn't done with the whole thing yet. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The latest news from Wall Street and Washington and more from Fallout. Our special coverage of the financial crisis next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
This evening at 6 on WOSU 820, NPR News. WOSU Public Media and Columbus Housing Partnership present commentator, editor, and past presidential advisor David Gergen, October 28th at the Ohio Theater. For tickets and more information, call 564-1664 or visit chpcolumbus.org.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820, NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. And we're at 614-292-8513 with voting information, questions, and answers about your vote. Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner joins us in the studio. Michael Stenziano, Jr., a director of the Franklin County Board of Elections. Peg Rosenfield, election specialist with the Ohio League of Women Voters. And again, you can email questions or comments to openline at WOSU.org. Question here, email, that says, for the Secretary of State, I've heard a lot of information concerning Ohio's homeless and whether or not this group is eligible to vote. I would like to think these people do indeed have the right to vote, but I'm confused what information they require, like a home address to cast their ballots. Could clear this up for Ohio's voters?
Yes, a person who is homeless can use the address of their homeless shelter as their residence. For those folks, they still have to supply ID. Now, It's a bit of an anomaly in the law, but to vote in early, either in person or by mail absentee, requires less proof of identification for a regular ballot than voting at the polling place on election day. So, for instance, if this voter only is able to provide the last four digits of their Social Security number because they don't have a driver's license number or a utility bill or a bank statement or some type of government document with their name and their residence address on it, that would suffice for them to vote an absentee ballot. But if they had only the last four digits of their Social Security number on election day, that would push them into the category of voting a provisional ballot, which ultimately, as long as everything checked out, would be counted. But I think most people like the peace of mind of knowing that their ballot is a regular ballot and that there's no question about whether it will be counted.
Mm-hmm. Let's go over what do you need to bring, Mike Stenziano, to the booth there for your identification on Election Day.
On Election Day, you will be asked to provide a photo identification with your address, unless it's a military ID. Those don't have to have an address, or you can provide a government utility bill, bank statement, cell phone bill that verifies your name and address, and we verify it with our poll book.
Mm-hmm.
The driver's license doesn't have to match as long as the address we have in our poll book is the most current one.
In other words, you can have a driver's license with an old address, and
Correct.
You can take that in, and that's okay.
Yes.
Because there was some confusion that some poll workers didn't know that last time.
Correct, and we're emphasizing it in our poll worker training classes, which mm-hmm. start this week, mm-hmm. that is not required that the addresses match up.
Yeah, okay. Peg Rosenfield, anything to add about that? By the way, any evidence that this voter ID requirement has prevented any legitimate voter from voting?
We don't know absolutely, but it certainly makes it much more difficult. And it intimidates people. Well, I don't know whether I have that. So we feel that it probably suppresses the vote. People just don't try. Because in addition to the homeless, one of the groups that has a problem are elderly people in nursing homes who may not have a driver's license. Actually, my mother moved here and never had an Ohio driver's license or ID. She didn't get a bill from them. I got it. She had no kind of ID. except she could have used her Social Security number. But I think that the ID requirements are very intimidating to a lot of people.
Officially, the Ohio League of Women Voters would like to see those, would like to see those removed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I can add to that because the signature still is used as a form of identification. That
yes.
was not eliminated. And any forensic handwriting examiner will tell you that it's the movement of the signature that is very hard to duplicate. And the signature really is the best form of identification.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It worked for decades in Ohio, and it would still work.
All right, Kari is on the line. Hello, Kari.
Hi. I don't really have a question, but I'd like to mention something that we ran into in 2004 and surprised us. The absentee ballots became available, and so we sent for them. But at the last minute, we decided we would just go to the polls instead. We didn't realize, and probably our own stupid fault for not reading the fine print, but since we had written for absentee ballots at the poll, we actually had to use a provisional ballot, which, of course, devastated us at that particular time. I haven't seen anything about that in most of the publication or most of the stuff that's been written about the current voting. I'm sure we overlooked it on the absentee ballot, but I think that's a factor that should be stressed. So if you just address that, I'll hang up and listen
sure
to
thing,
you.
Sure thing, Secretary Brin.
Thank you.
I don't think there was anything, Carrie, on your ballot in 2004. We made a specific effort this year on the absentee ballot application, also on the identification envelope, to tell voters that if you change your mind, you can still vote on Election Day, but you will have to vote a provisional ballot. So we're making sure people are aware of that.
And our next caller here is Mike. Mike, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a technical question. Optical scan, when I was a kid, way back when the snow was deep, you know, every day, they required pencils to fill in. I think number two lead pencil or something like that. And my question is, do the modern scanners, do they pick up ink? The reason for the question is that in Marion County, I voted early, and only pens were available to fill in the bubbles. Mm. And I had this flash of genius a little bit ago, and now I'm asking you.
The current, and I can speak to Franklin County's machines, we do rely on pens, and the scanners do pick up pens. If any ballot gets kicked out, we then have a team, a bipartisan team, that looks to see if we can determine voter intent and make sure it wasn't an over- or undervoted. So it would also get caught at that step as well.
Thank you. I feel much better.
Mike, thanks very much for your call, 614-292-8513 for your voting questions. Open line at WOSU.org. Eric is on the line. Hi, Eric.
Good morning. I live in Knox County, and last Friday I went to the Board of Elections and asked for a sample ballot. We have something over a dozen items, counting the candidates, on the ballot, and I was told that they didn't have one. They didn't hand out sample ballots, and that it was available online, which we eventually found. It isn't that easy to find, but my question is, why aren't they available, and what will people do who don't have access to the internet? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
I think probably the best the board could have done in that situation was to have Xeroxed the ballot that would have been the correct ballot for your precinct. I'm just suppositioning here, but perhaps they had a concern that if they did that, that could create confusion for people. We are working with all the 88 county boards of elections to help them improve their websites, and I know that doesn't really address the situation where you'd like to see a hard copy. I think in that case there were probably security concerns more than anything else.
I think there is a concern. Using the computer, the internet, is kind of not equally available to everybody. The best thing I could suggest to people in this is go to the library. All libraries, as far as I know, have internet connections, and they will be glad to print it out for you. And they'll find it and everything for people who aren't comfortable using the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Fred, can I mention one
yes.
thing? This year, for the first time, we have online a judicial voter guide, and it's on the front page of the Secretary of State's website, which is sos.state.oh.us. But it gives voters the opportunity to look at which judges are on the ballot in their county and learn a little bit about them. Pictures, 150-word personal statement, education summary, and work summary. And we tried this for the first time this year because it's really difficult to find out a lot about the judges.
Is there any interest or evidence here, Peg Rosenfield, the idea of somebody whose home has been foreclosed? Any question about it? And I've heard questions, but I don't quite understand at what point a foreclosure might be a problem for somebody.
I don't either understand.
Okay.
It's a question that we've heard from a number of people, that there are hundreds of people being foreclosed. And I know the secretary has put out an advisory for not to stop people from voting who are in the foreclosure process. What I'm concerned about is people who have been foreclosed, who got kicked out of their houses, and how can they – I just want to be sure they haven't lost their right to vote, because I assume if you're in that kind of traumatic situation, the last thing you're going to remember to do is change your voter registration address.
Mm-hmm.
What we did do in that advisory was to point out the ability – for that person to go to the precinct that is assigned to where they live and re-register, vote a provisional ballot at that location, unless they move from one county to another, in which case they would go to the Board of Elections. So the same rules still apply. If someone moved, we just treat it as a move. But we understand if someone's foreclosed and they're evicted from their home, they have to have some other location that they consider to be their abode or their residence, and then they would vote from that location at the precinct assigned to that location.
Mm-hmm. If somebody simply moved over the past several months, they need to re-register at the new address? Is that
yes,
right?
I think that's one of the concerns, especially with having Ohio State and Franklin County, that we anticipate having is students who registered for the primary go home for the summer, then come back in the fall. We would need them to re-register to have the most updated address in order for them not to have to vote provisionally.
Okay.
And today is the last day.
Today is the last day to do that?
Correct.
Okay, so they got to be about that very quickly. 614-292-8513. Here's an email from a listener, Carol. She says, my mother has voted in every election since she was old enough. She's had a series of strokes and a heart attack. She's blind because of the strokes and bedbound. When we received the absentee ballot application, I called the Board of Elections. I have her power of attorney, and I asked if I could sign her application, so she cannot. The answer was no. I asked why she was being disenfranchised. The answer was she wasn't. She can go to the polls, was the answer. I said she's bedbound. I was told there is a form she could fill out giving me permission to vote for her. I asked if she had to sign it. The answer was yes. I said she can't sign it. This fellow at the board, whoever board county this was, said he would check into it and get back to me. He hasn't got back to me. So Carol says, how can my mother vote?
This was a really bad issue, provision that was put in House Bill 3, and the people in the disability community tried to stop them from putting it in, and it just creates huge problems. There's been a provision for years that when you're registering voters, if the person cannot sign their name or make a mark or something, that somebody else could sign it for them and put their name and address under it, that I signed for this person. That ought to be the same rule for ballots. But we didn't get that fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There is a specific power of attorney provision that was put in the law with House Bill 3, but it probably would require the assistance of a lawyer. The form has to be completed by the doctor. It has to be on file with the Board of Elections. And it's available. It's more complicated. They could feel free to call the Secretary of State's office. We could walk them through that. The easiest number to call is 800-VOTE-VRI, and that's a toll-free number to reach the outreach portion of our office, who answers questions like that and would send information to them.
All right.
It's 877-VOTE, V-R-I.
877-VOTE. Okay. Question. A transgendered person is registered to vote under their newfound identity but hasn't a photo ID. Would several pieces of legitimate U.S. mail espousing the person's address be acceptable?
Same rules, the alternative forms of ID. A utility bill, a bank statement that has the name and address.
Mm-hmm.
issued within the last 12 months of the election.
Within 12 months of the election. Okay.
Now, if for instance, other government document could be a variety of things. It could be from a state university. It could be from a school district. So anything that would be from a government office or a body that is funded by the government would suffice for an other government document.
Okay. Another email question at WOSU openline at WOSU.org. Please clarify whether ex-felons have the right to vote. What laws are on the books that mandate that the state is required to notify prisoners of their voting rights upon being released? And is the state following up by informing prisoners of their rights upon being released?
Yeah.
As a former common pleas court judge who sentenced people for felony convictions, I can address a number of those issues. If a person has been convicted of a felony and they are not incarcerated on that felony, they can vote. They will want to, if they served a period of time either locally in jail or in prison, it's possible that the clerk of court's office could have sent their names to the Board of Elections, who would have canceled their registration. So they need to make sure that they're registered to vote, and they can call the Board of Elections or, to be on the safe side, fill out a new registration form, make sure it is postmarked by today or that they turn it in to the Board of Elections or to a mm-hmm. library today.
Okay.
We are making that information known through a joint effort with the Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections through probation departments and parole officers so that people who've been through the system or been convicted of a felony understand that they still have rights to vote.
All right. Let's go to our next email question. I re-registered. I moved from Dayton Avenue to Oakland Park Avenue on the other side of I-71 at Whetstone Library 2 weeks ago. And the Franklin County website has not updated my residence location. Is there a way to make sure they have received my updated information?
Best way to find out if we received it is contact our office. We are obviously receiving a lot of them, so keeping up is going to be a challenge in terms of getting that information up on our website. We ask for a little patience, maybe 3 days, but mm-hmm. we should be caught up as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the most common, if you had to come up with a list of frequently asked questions for a website, and maybe you've already done that, what are some of the most common questions you get about voting?
I think a lot of people want to know their polling location. Mm-hmm. They want to see a sample ballot, and they also want to know if they're registered. All are available at the Franklin County Board of Elections website, which is vote.franklincountyohio.gov. And you can do a search based on your name or on your address, and all that information is available.
You simply put your name in on the website,
mm-hmm.
and your voting location will come up.
Your voting location, as well as a sample ballot, will mm-hmm. be available. Mm-hmm. And if you've mailed an absentee ballot request, whether or not we've received it, and if we've already sent your absentee ballot to you.
Okay, so this is pretty much in line. And Secretary Bruner, do you think that most of the 88 counties around the state, for those listening in other counties, have a similar situation?
I think Franklin County is a little further ahead of some of the other counties technologically. Folks can go to our website, and right on the front you'll see 6 tiles. Basically, am I registered? Where do I vote? What's on the ballot? The Judicial Voter Guide, how to get an absentee ballot application. And we've got the 6th one, and it's I'll think of it in a minute. But all those questions, am I registered, where do I vote, and what's on the ballot, those are the 3 main questions voters want to know.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, it may be on Franklin County's as well, if someone pulls up their voting location, they can get driving directions right from their house to the voting location.
Yes. Franklin County does have that.
Mm-hmm. Peg Rosenfield for the Ohio League of Women Voters. Well, what are you anticipating here in terms of the election? And we want Ohio to have an orderly election, and we want it to be known nationally that we do. I see the Simpsons is coming up in the next issue of their program just before. In fact, it's scheduled to run on Fox just before the election day with a voting machine that the voter presses the button for Obama, and McCain registers. He presses the button for Obama again. McCain registers again, and he finally votes 6 times for McCain, and the machine finally swallows him. And it's made the point that this couldn't happen in the United States, but it could happen in Ohio, according to the writers of The Simpsons.
Unfortunately, we've had recent not perfect elections. There are actually no perfect elections. But I think, frankly, people have lost a little confidence in their election system over the last few elections. And a lot of the activists, frankly, are a little paranoid that things are not going to go well. I think I'm hoping that we only have the usual number of human errors, but there will be some, and there always have been. I can remember sitting in the Secretary of State's office with us waiting until all hours of the morning because some of the counties forgot to call in their final results, and we had to send the sheriff out to find the director because and send them back to the board to call in their final results so that we could figure out who won the election in Ohio.
Fortunately, well, that was 25 years ago.
Yes.
The system has been updated significantly.
But, I mean, you know, we're dealing with human beings who make mistakes. And I just hope that there are enough protections that will minimize those. And the other thing, I think we all pray that it will not be a close election.
Mm-hmm. Because inevitably somebody will suggest the election was rigged.
Whichever way
close,
it goes.
Whichever way it goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's a new book out, as a matter of fact, suggesting that the 2004 election was rigged, and so here in Ohio. So those kinds of fears and do maintain it. I guess Peggy used the word paranoia. I don't know which word we want to use, fear or paranoia.
Well, concern.
Concern.
Florida has a lot to answer for. That's what started it, and it's really not completely gone away yet, I'm afraid.
In all the years you've been observing elections here in Ohio, do you think that we've got it down better now over the years? I mean, we hear the old punch card machines, the other kinds of machines that we remember. Do you think the electronic machines and the greater education of poll workers has made it a better deal for Ohioans, or hasn't it gotten any better?
I think it's gotten so much more complex than it used to be that in many ways there are more opportunities for errors. When I first started working in elections, we still had a lot of states a lot of counties that still used paper ballots that you marked by hand and counted by hand. And you had two sets of poll workers, one who came in at the end when the polls closed and were there till the early morning counting the ballots. It was much easier, much less electronics of all kinds. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when I first started working in this field, we had 20-some counties who didn't even have voter registration.
No registration?
No, small rural counties who had no registration at all. You just showed up at the polls.
Wow.
So things have gotten much more complex. There are more opportunities for error. But on the other hand, we've become much more sophisticated about how to deal with those problems. And I have to say, we really need to fix some of our laws there. They've gotten...
Tell me about a law we need to fix.
House Bill 3.
Tell me about which provision.
Come on. The bill was a couple hundred pages long. It was just full of things that made life more difficult for voters and I think actually more difficult for election officials. They complicated things without making it any safer.
Tell us about one provision you think needs to be repealed or
the
altered.
ID.
The ID itself, okay.
It's created all sorts of problems. And I just think it was not only unnecessary but counterproductive.
Lex Stinziana with the Franklin County Board of Elections, how do you view the voter
ID? I think there has been significant change. And anytime there's change, that's where you see a lot of errors. But I would say it's a... all the offices, all 88 counties are under tremendous scrutiny. We do have post-election audits in terms of having people feel safe and secure that every properly registered cast ballot was counted. And so there are steps that have been in place. I do think the scrutiny is there, and it's a system that's continuing to develop, but I do think we're at a very good place given new administrations, a lot of turnover with boards of elections, that a lot of people are stepping up to the challenges and addressing the previous concerns that existed.
Tell me about training of poll workers now. That's got to be – as systems have grown more complex, I imagine the training has to have grown more complex.
The training has the approach Franklin County Board of Elections has taken for this election is defining the rules a little bit more. I think it used to be a little broad-based kind of your macro class that you would learn everything at once. Mm-hmm. In terms to better address that and have people have more defined roles – we have specific classes for certain individuals, and so it's more targeted. And the poll worker will be assigned to that role and have the expectation to be up to date with all the rules and procedures for that specific role.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking for mostly senior citizens? Are you looking for poll workers at all?
We included in our 60-day mail-in when we sent out the polling location information and the absentee ballot application to all active voters in Franklin County. We also included a pamphlet, and we've had a tremendous response for poll workers. We actually aren't really recruiting anyone. Our numbers are very good. Mm-hmm. Historically, we have had an older age group serving as poll workers, but the General Assembly has provided for the Youth at the Booth program, where we can have two 17-year-olds, 17 and up, work. And we've had a tremendous response, and people are very positive about seeing the young students working the polls on Election Day.
Mm-hmm. Secretary Bruner, let me ask you just for an overview. We mentioned that a number of states had already gone to paper ballots. You advocated that that happen. The legislature didn't think that was a good idea. Let's talk a little bit more about general, not only in Ohio but across the nation, confidence in American elections on the part of the voters.
I think the best predictor of confidence is how well the poll workers are trained. If the poll workers understand their job and know what they're doing, the lines move rather smoothly, quickly. My concern has been this year, by looking at 2004 and looking at the difficulties we experienced with long lines and understanding that a lot of that had to do with the limited number of machines and the simple laws of supply and demand. Imagine if you had 50 students who walk into a classroom and you say to them, we want you to all fill out a survey, but we only have 10 pencils. So you'll have to wait to use a pencil to fill out your survey till someone else is done. Well, voting machines work on the same principle. Paper ballots expand and contract with the number of voters that you have as long as you have enough places for people to vote with privacy. So we decided, since we have 53 counties where we're using actual machines to vote, we're going to compensate for that with backup paper ballots and dual lines to keep the lines moving. And we think that that will put Ohio much further ahead of any other state. I don't know of any other Secretary of State using the touchscreen machines who is taking these types of steps to be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just add one thing? Can I just put in a plug for the league? That we have call our website, either the state or the local, when you get it, Google it. Or we'll have a phone bank on Election Day all day answering any questions people have about the election or what they should do at Channel 10. And in the meantime, if people have questions that we can't resolve, particularly legal questions, on Election Day, there is a nonpartisan phone number you can call to get legal advice that's easy to remember, 800-OUR-VOTE. And it's staffed by attorneys who can help people who have legal questions that they're worried about something doing with the election that we can't deal with.
1-800-OUR-VOTE.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it started in 2004 and was in 2006, and now it's activated again for 2008.
Fred, also starting about a week before the election and through Election Day, people can call into the Secretary of State's office, the 877-VOTE-VRI. We will have phone lines available. And if there are specific problems in counties, we will be able to get that word out to our local people out there to work with the Board of Elections to be able to resolve those in real time.
We have about a minute left. You know, why do you think voting is restricted other than mail-in voting and now the absentee showing up at vets, for example, too? You know, one election day that's a work day for so many people. I mean, former Secretary of State Blackwell suggested we have voting on weekends. A lot of European countries have voting, Saturday, Sunday, weekend voting. Why do we restrict it to a day when people have to go to work?
Tradition.
I think it had to do with the rural economy and what day you took your goods to market. And so Tuesday worked out the best in the rural economy.
Absolutely. Gave you Monday to get to the polling place because you didn't go on Sunday. It couldn't be the first Monday in November because that's a religious holiday. So it became the first Tuesday in November.
Well, this is a century ago. Are we going to catch up here?
It's a tradition.
Democrats and Republicans can't move to alter a tradition.
Sure, you can change it. It's a federal law, but it's hard to change a tradition.
But weekend voting would be great.
Yeah.
And not one day, but 2 days on the weekend.
Yeah.
We're seeing how popular it is with people even being able to vote on Saturday and Sunday for the early voting here in Franklin County. I think we'd get a lot of response if we were able to get that done.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner. Mike Stinziano, Jr., Director of the Franklin County Board of Elections. Peg Rosenfield, Election Specialist with the Ohio League of Women Voters. Thanks to all of you who called and emailed in. Next, from National Public Radio, this, I believe, the executive producer, our listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org.